I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Welcome into another episode of Musings on Madison here on the Second City Hockey Podcast Network. I'm your host, Dave Melton, site manager at Second City Hockey. You can find me on Twitter at DMelt57. I've got all my line mates with me this evening, so let's bring them all in without other stuttering, I was going to say, but here we are anyway. Up first, the analytics darling of Second City Hockey. You can find on Twitter at Shepherd Price. It's Shepherd Price.
Wow. It was a G.I. Jane joke, dude.
Well, with all the things that have happened the last 3 or 4 days, I've kind of forgotten about that briefly until you mentioned it again. Like that night was a reminder of when Twitter is the best, which is within like the immediate aftermath of something ridiculous happening in the world that everybody kind of knows about. The jokes were amazing. The memes were amazing. There's going to be more.
The wildest thing to happen at the Oscars, maybe topping Moonlight and La La Land.
I could not tell you if I have ever watched the Oscars at any other point in my life. I'm not a big movie person, but I absolutely turned it on to see what was going to happen when Will Smith won his award. So I guess congratulations to the Academy. Your ratings were probably insanely high this year.
Like only went up 58% over last year, which is the lowest rated Oscars.
Oh, that's it? Only 58? I would have expected higher, to be honest.
The rest of it was terrible, though.
Yes, it was bad.
They ruined We Don't Talk About Bruno, and I love Meg Thee Stallion, but like...
I love Meg Thee Stallion, but like, again, just give us the song.
I will say, like, on Will Smith's behalf, like, I don't want to go too far down this road, but I mean... I listened to Jason Goff's podcast today, and he made a very compelling case about understanding why Will Smith did what he did. And I don't have any way to refute the argument that made. So if you go listen to Jason Goff's podcast, it's very good. It's all about all Chicago sports, but I'm not going to sit here and criticize Will Smith for what he did. I'm not really, I was just more into the jokes more than anything else and the memes because they've been great.
Yes.
There we go. All right. We're in agreement. We're going to change up the order of the intros, and you're going to see why in a bit, but you've already heard her voice a little bit. So we'll bring her in fully. She is Second City Hockey's Boolean wall of text. I almost messed it up. She's not on Twitter. You can find her at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR. It's Betsy.
I was like, I can't go quietly into the night without saying, why did they mess up the best song?
What was the song that they messed up? I missed this part of the album.
We don't talk about Bruno
from Encanto.
Okay.
They got through like the first verse and maybe chorus, and then Meg Thee Stallion made a remix.
Good.
So
it
how
was the greatest Meg Thee Stallion verse?
No.
How do they mess it up?
So
adding unnecessary singers instead of just doing the live version of the song.
Yeah, the song is the reason it's so popular is because of what it is. You know, it's like an unexpected Lin-Manuel like combination of Disney. It's such a good song, and it became huge on TikTok and everything like that. Nobody wanted to tune in for the first time it was ever sung live to see it not in its original or close to original form. They wanted to see the cast sing it. I mean, there were people that had like kids that stayed up to try to watch that, and
yeah,
they butchered it.
So what you're saying is that all those people are very thankful that the Will Smith, Chris Rock thing happened because no one talked about that.
It's true, I guess. I mean,
and I also
what the fuck was trending on Twitter, and then it took on a completely different meaning after the slaps.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. It was just, I only watched bits and pieces, but like I tuned in for that performance and was annoyed. And again, yeah. So it is what it is, I guess.
Well, yeah. I mean, are you a regular watcher of the Oscars? Like I'm not, but I know it's a major thing for a lot of people because movies are pretty big in this country and everywhere.
No, traditionally, because the Oscars are very sanitized and whitewashed, and I don't like, it's only occasionally that I think they even get it slightly right. Like occasionally, like they did last night. I thought Coda straight of one and all this other stuff. Not last night, Sunday, but it's a weird incestuous group of celebrities fawning over themselves over things that okay. don't necessarily appeal or,
I feel like award shows in general have gotten that way. I mean, even like it carries into sports a little bit too. I think like some of the sports award shows are just, they're not really entertaining anymore. Like the NHL award shows, they bring off some like D-list comedian to try and be the host, and it's usually never really entertaining. The ESPYs hasn't been good since like Justin Timberlake had an incredible opening monologue in like 2008. So
yeah,
you know, it is what it is. But let's bring in the last member of the usual crew, playing with an upper body injury tonight. So we'll apologize in advance for him if it's a little tough for him to tough it out tonight. But we appreciate his efforts anyway. And he is the Second City Hockey, what Jake Snyder is to minus the bear. He's on Twitter at Mil182. It's Mil Savage.
So I'm assuming you let me go last so we can give a big sky point tonight.
Yeah, that's exactly the reason.
So rest in peace to Taylor Hawkins, which I know Dave and I are both big Foo Fighters guys. Extremely sad passing this past week.
Yeah, completely shocking and totally out of nowhere. Like I had a text from a friend at 10:30 at night that I thought something was wrong with him or someone in his family. And it was just Taylor Hawkins, what the fuck? And then I saw it and I was too upset to go to sleep for like 2 hours because I was like, that's just, I have no words. Like it just came completely out of nowhere. And this drummer from this really fun band is gone.
Yeah. I mean, for me, Taylor Hawkins is an incredible drummer, but he's also a really good musician in his own right. He has some great solo stuff. And some people might know he drummed for Alanis Morissette when she was touring mm-hmm. Jagged Little Pill when she exploded in the 90s. So he's really versatile, and anytime you watch any of their back, you know, like their interviews and stuff like that, he's hilarious, great singer. And, you know, he was only 50, which isn't old at all. It's not like he was in his 20s, like a lot of musicians, but still it's very sad and somebody who was very inspirational for me. So tough week. I didn't really sleep. I kind of the next day just listened to their third record on loop, which is the first one he played drums on.
Yeah, the first two he didn't play. And actually, I learned something new about him over the weekend when I was just reading stories about him. For Coheed and Cambria's Good Apollo 4 and Keeping Secrets of Silent Earth 3, I believe, were the two albums. They were in some sort of contract dispute with their drummer. And Taylor Hawkins did the drums on those two albums.
Yeah, I mean,
I had no idea about.
He's a great studio guy. He could do it all. And, you know, the only thing I could say is I'm really sorry for, obviously, for the Foo Fighters and for his wife and children and his family, people who actually knew him. But also, he lived a pretty awesome life. You know, he set out a lot of insane goals and he accomplished all of them. I mean, the guy, you know, met all his heroes. He played on SNL like almost 10 times. So many platinum albums and, you know, all that stuff. So God bless and rest in peace, Taylor.
I wrote a big thing about him today as part of the Blackhawks update, and I didn't want to get too into my own story because it was about Taylor Hawkins, but there's a video in there of at the 2018 Wrigley Field show. They actually did two nights there. I was there for the second night, and Taylor comes out from behind the drum kit and sings. Dave Grohl went back on the drums, and they did Queen and David Bowie's Under Pressure, which might be my favorite classic song ever, and to hear that band do that song, that's like top five concert moments of my life. And I'm incredibly bummed that something like that will never happen again for me. Cause I don't know what's going to happen with the Foo Fighters in the future, but yeah. It feels like it's, I don't know. It's just, it'll be different. There's no other way to describe it.
Well, I'll say this, just on an end note, I know you and I could probably tell stories about him and Foo Fighters related stories all podcast. And I'm sure I even have some Foo Fighters, Taylor Swift stories I could tell Betsy and Shay that they might appreciate, but we have some hockey to get into.
We do. Maybe that we'll do that in the summer when we have some of our off season shows. Betsy and Shay, I don't know if any either one of you were big into the Foo Fighters.
I think they're a great band. I can't say that I'm the most into them. Like they're not Scottish, which seems to be my almost exclusively my taste. Is you feed me any Scottish band and I will be extremely into them. See Churches. Okay. See Biffy Clyro. So
all right. Betsy, what about you? Were you
I know some of their songs?
Okay. Well, that's totally fine. Like I feel like that was a band that they were so big that everybody at least knew one song.
I do want to throw out this: if you ever went to Hawks games in the last decade, the Pretender, Foo Fighters song, The Pretender, would come on after second intermission before puck drop. First intermission, rather.
Did they play it Monday night?
I was
going to
say, I know.
I don't recall, but you'll hear Taylor, over the riff. And if you listen to Foo Fighters' Greatest Hits, that's one of those CDs where you show people and they're like, oh, I know like 15 of these songs. I didn't know it was them.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they were so relevant through an era where like music was kind of changing. So anyways,
all right. Yeah, we'll do that in one of our summer episodes maybe. But let's get into the hockey because boy, do we have some interesting hockey to discuss. In the last week of games, they beat Anaheim and then they beat somebody else on Thursday. And I'm drawing a blank. Who was that?
Kings.
The Kings. There you go. Thank you. And then they lost to the Knights over the weekend, had a 3-goal lead, blew it. It's still annoying to blow a 3-goal lead, but I mean, at least like Vegas is a playoff team. And then they fucking blow a 4-goal lead to the Buffalo Sabres on Monday night at home. And Shay, go ahead. Whatever's on your mind as I'm talking about this game, just start talking because I don't know what else to say about that game.
Hi, it's me, the kid who said at the beginning of the season, laughed when asked, are the Blackhawks a playoff team? Because that was the appropriate reaction. This is a bad team who's been bad all season. Look at their stats. They are
okay.
29th in expected goals for. It's 5-on-5. You can't unexpect the Blackhawks to blow stuff. Is it significantly worse that they did it against the Buffalo Sabres, who are like neck and neck with them in terms of how bad they are this season? Yeah. Yeah. Vegas is a desperate team trying to hang on to the playoffs who beat the Blackhawks in overtime. Fine. Mm-hmm. Okay. An understandable loss. After two straight wins, you take the point streak. That's three games point streak.
three-game point streak. Woo!
At this point in time, that's what you're like. That is a woo for the Blackhawks. The do it against the Sabres, though. That stinks.
Yeah.
That stings.
I think that's what I kept coming back to, like the Vegas thing. I don't want to say the Vegas thing is like acceptable because again, it's a 3-goal lead the third period. NHL team should be able to defend that. Yeah, I know the Hawks are bad, whatever. No excuse. But this 4 goals to the Sabres, man. And like every statistical category you want to say that the Hawks are bad in, the Buffalo's just as bad in every one of those categories. So it's like, and like, I don't even know who, like the Sabres traded away the only like legitimate stud forward that they have. I felt, well, Tage Thompson's getting better for sure. But like they traded Jack Eichel. Who else is on that team?
Alex Tuch, who was in the Jack Eichel trade, is a good forward who should not have been on a third line for the Golden Knights for the last few years.
Cousins is going to be good.
Okay, I'm still running out of reasons to...
Peyton Krebs is going to be good.
Explain a 4-goal lead.
Their defense is fine. It's going to improve when Owen Power gets there.
But, Betsy, what about you? Your thoughts on the last week of hockey, probably punctuated by Monday's disaster.
It was expected. I mean, like,
legitimately, were you expecting it? Like, I had
the minute Buffalo scored that first goal, commented in our Slack, was like, are they about to blow this lead? I bet they could, or something like that. Cause I think I just was like, legitimately, like, I bet they could blow a 4-goal lead. I bet this could happen. And then sure enough, it did. And it's not really that it was like super expected. It's just, it's not unsurprising that it happened. Maybe that's a better word. I didn't expect it, but I don't find it surprising. And I'm one of the, I think that the Blackhawks do not have a bad set of personnel. I still don't really like King's way of doing things. I was trying to explain it. So like that there's nothing that they do really that addresses the fact that they're not a possession team. You know, they've done a good job at learning how to protect the slot a little bit better, not against Buffalo. That was actually one of the worst games of the season there, but like in general, under King, they addressed some defensive things and then they tweaked the offense to try to help. And it did, but none of that correlated to better possession. And we know that some of the players that have been good possession players before are floundered under the King and then Jeremy Colleton before that. And it's not because those players just suddenly become poor. It's because what they're playing in is still not good. So I'm of the mind that I can't make a decision on players that are playing right now until they're under a good coach. And I'm not going to get upset really about anything that happens at the end of this, the rest of this season. It's not great. It's not fun to watch sometimes, though. That game was fairly entertaining, even with them losing.
Depends on your definition of the word, I guess.
It was fine. Like as a Blackhawks fan, it was like, ugh. But as like watching hockey, a lot of those plays were really cool. Most of the goals were like tips and deflections and good passing plays from the Sabres. So that was good hockey to watch. I was impressed with that kind of stuff. So like you have, like, that's fine. It's just, you wish they were not where they are right now. That's always going to be disappointing, but we're too deep into it to get upset anymore.
Oh, you say that, but I don't know if upset is the right word, but more just like, it was just more, I think exasperated is the word. It's just like, fucking really? Like, four goals to Buffalo. But I want to come back to the Derek King stuff you mentioned, but I want to bring in Mill first and get his thoughts on the last week.
Yeah, to piggyback on what Betsy said, I think the possession is so bad, but it really, this streak of games kind of showed you how much Marc-Andre Fleury covered up for that. Like the actual possession, but how for people maybe not looking at the numbers, it kind of seems like it's better than it is.
Mm-hmm.
Because of how outstanding he just is as a player. But also, I felt a lot like when Homer's at the Isotopes game, and it's their hometown team, and they take the field and people are just booing him. And he goes, just hurry up and lose so we can get out of here. Cause that's kind of like when they're in a game and it's competitive, or they come back, even if they don't win, it's like, okay. But when you shit your pants like that, and the Vegas one is, you know, whatever, like Vegas is a solid team. They have very, very good players. And they got a point out of it still, but like at home, the Buffalo 4 goals, like, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, and the Vegas one, I think the way the Vegas meltdown started is what because the first goal was a softie that Lankinen gave up against Vegas, and that and I feel like whenever the goalie, when you have a multi-goal lead and if your goalie gives up a softie, that's a it's a really bad sign, because it feels like that just kind of deflates everyone, especially when you have a team like the Blackhawks that have had the season that they've had. I feel like the first goal against Buffalo was not a softie. I think I can't exactly remember how it happened, but either way, it's just exasperated and disheartened and all those other words I was using earlier. But yeah, I don't know. I've been trying to think of other ways to describe this as I've been preparing mentally to talk about this game tonight, but I kept running out of things. It's just like, you just like throw your hands up in the air and like, what do you do? What do you say? Like, this is just kind of where we are right now. And I hope that's the last four goal lead that they blow for the rest of the season.
But this is, that game is a good reason to give King some criticism on top of the normal stuff, because if you have a lead like that, you can't get complacent. Like, you gotta, you know, put them to the sword.
Yeah. All right. So this is, you kind of bring me into what I wanted to talk about a little bit tonight, related to Derek King. Cause so some of his comments after the game did not sit well with me. And I try not to put so much into what coaches say after games, because, you know, it's immediate, media feedback. They don't have a chance to watch the film and digest and really think about what happened. But I don't know. I just didn't like the way King described this when he said, and I'm quoting here, we stopped playing the game the right way. We just decided upon ourselves to go and do what they wanted to do. We didn't do anything we asked them to do. That just screams like a defeated coach to me, or just your job as the coach is to make them do the things that you want them to do. And if they're not doing it, you need to sit their asses on the bench for a shift, maybe a period. But the fact that he chalked that game up, the loss of that game, to players not doing what he was asking them to do, that really is not, that's not a very encouraging sign for me, interim coach or not. Shay, what did you think about that? I don't know if you saw those quotes.
I mean, I have very firmly entrenched opinions on Derek King, and if Kyle Davidson decides to remove the interim tag from Derek King, I will have very firmly entrenched opinions on Kyle Davidson. Derek King, it doesn't surprise me in the slightest that those comments sound like the comments of a coach who's lost the locker room, and that doesn't surprise me in the slightest.
See, I don't know if lost the locker room is how I would describe it, but more just
doesn't care about losing the locker room.
It's like there's just like there's not enough discipline, I guess. Like, players can get away with doing the, you know, having bad habits and doing the wrong things in the game and not have the repercussions for doing them of losing ice time or whatever.
Some players
that they don't respect him, maybe. And I get why his methods don't work.
Betsy, go ahead.
Well, you say some players had, like, they get disciplined. Kershev gets disciplined, and
Kubalik gets
Kubalik got disciplined, and Strome got disciplined.
Strome.
Originally. And then you have Caleb Jones still playing, even though he sees him. Like, I will admit, he sees improvement when he's completely sheltered, but he had like 20 games in a row, maybe, that he was not good. And yet he didn't get sad at all. Then you have Erik Gustafsson, who I haven't minded, like, I didn't mind for a while, but then he started stringing together some really bad, even for him, games, including, I think he was directly responsible for the situations on two of the goals for Buffalo, one of which he, instead of trying to get the puck out properly, he just kind of flung it into the middle of a bunch of Buffalo players. Like, why would you, why? And then the other one was him giving it up immediately behind the net. Like, he didn't even, he just threw it and there was nothing but a Buffalo player there. Like, nobody else existed. Like, why would you ever do that? It's because he didn't look. So anyway, like, and he has reduced minutes, but he still plays. Yeah. And I'm, I'm like, don't fully grasp it. I can understand not pulling up the Rockford kids because they're playing right now, but you could give way more minutes to Vlasic. I mean, what's
yeah,
the point? Let him play.
That's the one player, like Alex Vlasic, if you know, he's at the NHL level. They've scratched him for 3 games in a row, and you can't convince me that there's 6 defensemen in the Blackhawks lineup that are all earning their ice time, as King mentioned with in regards to young players. So, I mean, shit, Riley Stillman can sit for a game too. I don't, there's a lot of candidates on that blue line.
Yeah, I mean, this comes back to that one comment that he didn't play Galvis after Galvis had like 3 really excellent games in a row, and he scratched him to get Gustafson back in the lineup. And then when somebody asked him afterwards, he was like, well, you know, I wanted to do it because, you know, they earned it. The vets earned it, essentially. Like, didn't want to do them a disservice. Those aren't his actual words, because that sounds too like nice of a word. I don't think he'd ever use that word, but you know, that's essentially what he said. And everybody was like, what are you talking about? They've been playing terribly. Galvis hasn't put a bad game up yet as a guy that literally just walked into the thing. And I would have accepted more that he said, well, our intent was for him just to play a few games and then we were going to send him back. That's fine. That's a plan. But don't try to tell me that these other guys are playing better than him. So, yeah, I get frustrated at some of his comments. I like that he's more candid than some coaches, but that also means that he's saying some stupid stuff, like stuff that you go, but why, sir? This is why you've been an AHL backup coach your entire career, maybe.
Yeah. Like, and like, it's so like your point, like I appreciate his candor that he's been, I think he did rescue the Hawks. He did help turn things around with how miserable October was. And like Dylan Strome has been a lot better since. Dylan Strome has been in the lineup and playing really well with Kane and DeBrincat since he's put that group together. So it's not all bad under King, but I'm joining Shea's camp where I don't feel like there's enough positives here to make him the full-time head coach after the season ends. That would be a very, very discouraging move if that's where the Hawks ended up. Mill, what about you?
So the way I feel about Derek King is he's not really a good coach or a bad coach. He's just kind of a guy because, you know, we've watched him enough now where I can say good players don't usually struggle under him like they did under Colleton.
Yeah.
Like he doesn't hinder guys who could play. But he does not know how to shelter guys. Betsy brought that up with Caleb Jones. And like a guy like Quenneville, not to harken back to that era too much, but he won a cup with like David Rundblad and Kyle Comiskey in the lineup. So now granted, they had an amazing defensive, you know, core, but he knew how to shelter those guys in certain situations. It's like when you're playing regular season games and you can't shelter a Caleb Jones or a Gustafson, or I think Stillman kind of sucks just with a lot of his habits and stuff. They don't have a coach who's going to make those guys better or protect them. And they honestly, they don't have a guy who's going to correct a lot of their bad habits. And those, you know, aside from maybe like Seth Jones or maybe Murphy, a lot of those guys can't play their way out of trouble.
Yeah. And there's not, like the thing you need out of the next coach is they need to develop a lot of young guys. I mean, and I don't know how much better Kirby Dach has gotten this season. I feel like we talked about this last week a little bit. It feels like Phil Kurashev has almost taken a step back. And there's not really too many other young guys on the team, really. Obviously whatever coach takes over next season, if it's King or whoever, like, I imagine there's going to be more young guys up at the NHL level, and whatever short-term, long-term plans the Hawks have, these young guys need to get better regardless if they're going to be any sort of, if there's going to be any sort of progress with the direction of the team. So
I also don't think it'd be a bad idea for them to bring in some veterans. Like I really liked having Brian Campbell around for them.
Yeah,
obviously he's done now, but
yeah, not on the ice, but
you know, guys who can work with them and who have that experience, because
so, Coach Marian Hossa.
Yes, I've been saying.
Look
for I'm much more.
He lives in a castle in Europe. Are you gonna leave?
I'm much more concerned about their blue line, though.
Yeah. How
I think Marian Hossa could teach blue liners to play defense.
I don't doubt that.
My thing is, how crazy is Putin? Because he might invade Slovakia, and then maybe Marian Hossa comes to coach the Bauhaus.
Wow. When you referenced Putin, I had no idea where the hell you were going, but now I understand. Oh, my God.
Eastern Europe.
No, you're not. Yeah, it makes sense now that you got there. But I just when I heard the word Putin, I'm like, what the fuck is going
maybe
on?
Maybe they could hire a dream Swede team, Oduya and Jalmerson. Just come do it. Come together.
All right, I'm gonna plug this podcast, and we're gonna take a break here in a second. I don't know if the rest of you listen to the 32 Thoughts podcast with Elliot Friedman. The Johnny Oduya was on it this week, and he was fantastic. Like, I don't remember Johnny Oduya talking ever at any point while he was with the Blackhawks, and so the voice I heard on the podcast like didn't match up with the face I remember seeing for 5 years. But I also like I don't know what Johnny Oduya's voice sounded like because it felt like he never did an interview. But the things he talked about when he got into how he's teaching hockey to like teenagers in Sweden, like I think he said like kids under the age of 16, like 12 to 16 roughly was the age gap. And the way he described his approach to everything, I'm like, that's the guy I want coaching my NHL team. So you know what? Maybe we'll dive into that a little bit more. But let's take a quick time out, gather our thoughts. Mill's going to get some more tea so we can gut out the second half of this podcast. And then we're going to come back and talk about some more Blackhawk stuff. So come on back for all of that.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Welcome back to Musings on Madison, and had some other things we wanted to dive into. And actually, during our little intermission there, we started to talk about all this stuff. So I'm going to let Betsy pick up midstream where she was talking right before I stopped her and hit the record button. So Betsy, if you want to take back the floor, and then we'll bring Mill and Shay in afterwards.
Well, one of the points in my recap for the Buffalo game was about Sam Lafferty, who I think has become a little bit of a fan favorite. I started to become a fan favorite because of how hard he works, but also how good he is when he exerts the force of his hard work, which are not the same things. Lots of people can be hardworking, but not be useful. He is useful. And the point I made was about how he could help a team become a good possession team because of how he directed that one hit. It encapsulated the idea of smart hitting that again, very reminiscent of Boland is the first player that came to mind.
Woo!
Because Sam Lafferty was going straight in on the Buffalo player, but he then changed his angle when he saw Reese Johnson coming up the wall so that the puck would hopefully and most likely pop towards him, which it did. And of course, then he got in front of the net and did that. But like just the hit alone was so smart. And I think there are players on the Blackhawks that could do that kind of stuff, but that either it's not being fostered properly or it's just not set up system-wise. But the reason that the Blackhawks of old were so good, and Dave was talking about the point that Oduya made on the podcast interview about how he would lure players in to hit him so that he could then get out of the way, or Kruger's another perfect example. How many times did Kruger get like just laid out and get up?
It was a running meme, I think, among
Blackhawks
fans.
He would get ragdolled, but if he never, like, the team rarely ever lost possession with him getting laid out because he did his job. He's like, I'll take the hit to make the play. And I don't know what about this group. I think some of them could do that. Like maybe not die every time like Frogger, you know, like a million lives.
That's why he got the nickname Frogger, because he kept getting run over.
Yeah. But I think there's components to the team that they have now that could do things like that. And I'm looking forward to them trying to find a coach or somebody who can instill in them those types of things. Some players do it more naturally. I think DeBrincat does it pretty naturally. Like he has good shiftiness for like his size. I know he's built like a hydrant, but like that kind of stuff. I think Strome has some good, like he does some good stuff. Kubalik had shown some shiftiness too originally, and he's just not anymore. But
it just seems like that's like those are the subtle like little things that coaches can point out and reinforce that make a player go from being like a fringe AHL guy to a legitimate NHL player, whether that's top six, bottom six, whatever. But those are the little nuances that become so important at the NHL level.
Yeah. And Seth Jones is a great example of a player who has all of the attributes to be a number one D and the innate ability to be. And he does a lot of things really well, a lot better than he's done a lot better this year with the Blackhawks than he did for 2 years in a row with Columbus. Mm-hmm. But there's still parts of his game where I'm like, if somebody would just take him and show him, if you just did this slightly differently or that slightly differently, he could be even better because he has the ability and he's already really good. So could he go another level? I know his age might make that difficult because he still seems young, but he's going to be 27 soon or 28. How old is he now?
I know upper 20s, but yeah, there's
8.
There's, yeah, he's got to turn 28. Yeah.
Like I think that's the difference between the Hawks of the last four or five years and the Hawks from before that is just, it feels like they're on a lot of players. There are more ounces to be squeezed out of their ability. I guess there's more there than the Hawks are getting out of some of these guys. It's just, you know, they keep doing these, you know, this rotating cast of characters on the lineup. And it feels like at some point, like maybe it's not the players themselves. Maybe it's the way they are being coached or not being coached or what have you.
Not being developed properly.
Not being developed. Yeah, exactly. Just
Blackhawks don't develop people very well.
Yeah. So I'll spin this over to Shay. I don't know if you had more to add to that or if there's any other players that have stood out to you in the last few weeks, but just wherever you wanted to take it, Shay, all yours.
We'll probably have a negative conversation at some point, right? Because there's a few players on this team who don't play up to their cap. I will say that I think Seth Jones is one of them. There needs to be more juice out of Seth Jones that's able to be squeezed by a good coach. Because they're paying him $9.5 million. And like, yeah, play him some minutes. Play him like 23 minutes like right now. Sure.
Well, that's what I meant.
Is he a $9.5 million player? No.
That's not his fault, though.
No, it's not. And it's not Kyle Davidson's fault either. Unless Kyle Davidson is like, hey, stay at a moment. Trade for Seth Jones. You can't prove that wasn't the case.
Shay, I'm going to climb through this microphone. I don't know how.
In terms of positives, Bill Lidstrom could play hockey.
Yeah. Breaking news.
I forgot
about
that for a little while.
He was a number three overall pick, for the love of God.
Yeah. On a team that, like, let's be real honest here. Like, the Blackhawks don't have a ton of depth. Like, you can like the top of the lineup as much as you want, but they don't have a ton of depth.
Yeah,
down the middle.
I feel like they don't have a second line. Like, they have the top line with DeBrincat, Strome, and Kane, and then like a bunch of dudes, and then maybe a fourth line.
Yeah, so like this team should have a second line center. His name should be Kirby Dach. It's not.
He did. He was sick for the last game. Maybe that's why they blew the 4-goal lead. It was Kirby Dach's absence. Kirby Dach and Connor Murphy. That was the glue holding.
The second one, maybe.
The latter definitely more than the former, but
yes. It's just like.
There's a lot of those.
Let's have this conversation. Jonathan Toews can't really play hockey at the level he once was able to.
And like a 40 point player. He said that right after the Buffalo game where he was great.
He did have a vintage.
Yeah. The season he's
no,
been
that's
not
that's great. Fair. Well, that's he's you know, yes, you're not wrong. But I mean, Taves is coming back from missing an entire season and whatever that ailment was, which still is kind of weird and mysterious. And
is he okay? Because like it explains some things if he's not okay.
I physically he seems to be, yeah. And I think he said that he thought he was getting closer to being back to where he wanted to be, and then he had the concussion and was out for a while, and that kind of set him back some more. But I don't think you're going to get number one center Jonathan Toews ever again. That's not going to happen.
You're not getting number two center Jonathan Toews. You're going to like number three center Jonathan Toews.
I think, yeah. I mean,
on a good team, which is where the Blackhawks want to go again, he's a number three center.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to be totally honest, I think this is the last month of Jonathan Toews' career in Chicago. Like the way his comments have gone. Like it feels like in a month he's going to ask to be traded or what have you. Like he doesn't seem like he wants to be around for the rebuild. And it's kind of, it feels weird to say that. But I feel like he has every right. If he doesn't want to be around for it, fine. At least communicate that, you know, go to Davidson and they'll get you out of town, maybe somewhere. And I don't know what you get for him, but.
And going back to a positive player, As soon as he asked for that trade, strap the C to Alex DeBrincat's chest.
Yeah,
that kid is special. And like, please don't trade him.
I think I tweeted this from the SCH account and got more likes on than anything I've ever tweeted. I think I said the number one reason why I want the Blackhawks to be good again is because I want to see Alex DeBrincat in the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I feel like it would be so good. Special. Yeah,
it feels weird saying about that about a 23-year-old, but that kid's gonna be special. But we haven't seen him in the playoffs, really.
Yeah. I don't even know if the bubble counts, and that was his like down year too.
Yeah, like that. Alex Rinka in those playoffs in the bubble was also a better playmaker than he was a goal scorer, and like getting goal scorer Alex Rinka in the playoffs, like this team needs to rebuild quickly just so we can see like. 28-year-old Alex DeBrincat in the playoffs.
Yeah. That'll be an extra interesting thing. Like if Taves does leave in the offseason, and obviously like the next guy in line would seem to be Kane. However, if you want to announce that like this is the new era of Blackhawks hockey.
Yes. The way to do that
I could see
Alex DeBrincat.
I don't think Kane would want to see.
There's also that aspect of it too. I think Kane also might understand the situation they're in, and he'd be like, no, give it to DeBrincat. It's his team now. I'm just here for the ride. Mel, what about you? Any other thoughts on all this stuff or any other player observations from the last few weeks?
Yeah, I think on the front of like age and development, I think there's kind of two sides. Obviously, there comes a certain point where there's a wall and you can't really develop a player much more. But I do think you can get guys to change certain aspects of their game. Like Mike Modano was 29 and Hitchcock got him to start playing defense and they won a cup.
Steve Yzerman had that too. Like he was scoring like 100 and some points a season. And then he went down to like the 80s and 90s and Detroit won a bunch of cups.
Right, and like different sport, but Shaq was 27 when Phil Jackson. No, but he couldn't get it done.
I love the cross sports comparisons whenever they come up, but I appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean Phil Jackson, and same thing with the Bulls. He came in and goes, "We're going to run this triangle offense." Everyone was pissed because it was an equal opportunity offense with stars playing it, but it works. Lets you run ISO. So I think it's more of a mindset. So like getting a guy like Seth Jones into a system where it's like, hey, like. You have to do these things. Don't do these things. Get rid of bad habits. And then when we need you to take over or use your athleticism, you can, but don't rely on it.
Yeah.
But you know, with the state of the team too, I said this, I think on the last podcast, they have to have a systematic approach to this and say, hey, this is who we are. This is how we want to play hockey. This is how we're going to develop and teach our guys. Maybe that starts with whoever they hire as coach and then they build from there. But as far as Taves go, that's Taves is going to be interesting. I could see a lot of people. I know a lot of people like don't like him for some reason, one reason or another, and they're going to be happy that he's gone. And then he's going to go join some team and win another cup probably, and they're going to be pissed. But But think about having him as your three center, like Shea brought up, on a good team.
Yeah,
he's going to win every dungeon face off.
Yeah. I feel like there's still, you know, there's still a, you know, maybe not a $10 million hockey player, but there's certainly a good hockey player that can contribute to a winning franchise. And also, you know, if whatever intangibles you want to throw in there, I mean, I'm sure there's somebody in the NHL that puts value in that, because it seems like everybody in the NHL loves to value themselves some intangibles.
The dollar amount is definitely not there, but I mean, this has been drilled into the ground. Like, who cares at this point?
And you know what? And the other name you mentioned, Seth Jones, and like we were talking about DeBrincat in the playoffs, like one of the things that I remember about Seth Jones when he was traded to the Blackhawks was all of the people saying that he damn near single-handedly shut down Tampa's offense in that series a few years ago.
He was very good in that one
too. Yeah, so maybe you get some postseason Seth Jones too. I don't know. To Shea's point about, I hope they, like, you know, you have to do it right. You know, it's not like the Hawks are going to be competing for the Cup next year or any time. I don't know when. I can't put a time on it because I have no idea, but it's like crossing all of my fingers and all of my toes that it doesn't take too long so that maybe some of these guys that are on the team now are still here and we get to see them be in the playoffs at some point. Cause if Alex DeBrincat ends up going somewhere else and winning a cup, like that'll be a pretty big bummer. So
the DeBrincat jersey with the C would look hard too. Just like thinking about it, you know, 12 with a big C, and then like the way that they have the little E in his name. I used to have to letter those, so I'm just thinking about that.
And it is a good look. And also, I think it'd be great to have the 5'6" guy skating around with the C.
Yeah.
There's something about for sure us short guys everywhere to have a captain in the NHL. Would he be the shortest captain in NHL history? Was Marty Sanlouis ever a captain in Tampa?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, before he left.
That was the first name that came to mind. I couldn't
also
remember.
Wasn't Giunta a captain?
Oh yeah. Okay. There's been some other short captains, but
hockey is so weird because there's some guys, if you see them in person, they're really small. And then there's some guys that are enormous. You know, I ran into Anisimov at a convention. I was working at Hawks convention, and he was outside on his cell phone. I didn't say anything to him. He was talking on the phone. I'm like, Jesus, this is a large man.
He was like 6'4", 220, I think. Yeah.
His frame. Big guy, yeah. You know what I mean? Like frame just, and he had like a suit on and everything. And I'm just like, damn, like I would not want to run into this guy on the ice.
Like there are some, like a lot of professional athletes these days, like especially like football players, don't look like human beings.
Yeah.
But like some hockey players do, but as you said, like some of them also look like football players.
I'm also 6 feet tall, but I'm the shortest Serb. So
6 feet tall must be nice. Well, we've brought up Artem Anisimov, so we've officially strayed as far off the rails as we can go with Blackhawks talk. So as the best food themed hockey podcast on the internet, we didn't do this last week because there was so much to talk about around the trade deadline. But we wanted to circle back because I was over in England. I had a lot of food experiences, and Shay's been to. Do you go to all of the UK or just England, or where was it?
I've been everywhere but Wales.
Okay.
I lived there for 6 months.
I've been to England too.
Okay. I think we just need to have a general food discussion about England and Mill, if you want to chime in.
I'm not allowed in the country.
Okay.
I hate to say this as a mostly Englishman, but I'll start here. Our food is bad.
Well,
straight up.
All right. What traditional English food was so much better though? Like that's the thing. Like I had the one hotel I stayed at, I had like the traditional English breakfast every morning. Didn't have blood pudding, which I guess I was a little bummed about, but like the sunny side up eggs and sausages and some tea. Like it was pretty good. I wouldn't say it like blew anything out of the water compared to an American style breakfast. I actually saw a place that advertised American style pancakes, which I didn't realize that was a thing.
Yeah. But, like, you know how like Dutch pancakes exist and like things like that? American style pancakes exist.
Yeah. So what makes you think American food is, I'm not defending American food, but I just want to hear more about
No. I meant English food is
bad. Oh, okay. That's
we like the English think boiling is a spice, and I say that as a as the other part of me mostly being Dutch. The Dutch also think boiling is a spice, but the Dutch also know what sugar is because stroopwafel exists. Okay. The English, like, they have fine chocolate. It's not nowhere near as good as the EU's. Like the English, like the full black breakfast is like a little bit overblown. And they think beans goes at breakfast.
Yeah, I did not have beans on my toast.
Did you have black pudding, which is something that's pretty common with
English black pudding actually.
Breakfast.
I did not, but black pudding does not sound very enticing. So
it's blood sausage.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I didn't have that. I had fish and chips, which
fish and chips is like the one good thing English does.
It's good. When I went to the place to get it, I didn't know that I had to pick the type of fish. So that caught me off guard initially. And also, like, I thought I was going to get like chicken tenders style served. No, I got like it was the length of my forearm size.
Yeah.
Cod. It was very good. The chips were just potato wedges. Like, it wasn't anything fancy, but
yeah,
but the cod was delightful. Like, the batter and everything. It was just like a place called Mike's Fish and Chips. Like, I have no idea what it was compared to other places, but it was very good. They have, I did not get to try this because A, I didn't go to a McDonald's, and B, I'm told that you couldn't find them anywhere anyway because they were so popular they went out of sale. But apparently they had a chicken Big Mac over there for a while.
Huh.
Which is just a Big Mac with chicken patties instead of beef patties. But
I will say this. The English love their chicken because, like, fry joints are, like, one of the most popular things there. Like a good fry spot, which is mostly fried chicken, and then again fried foods.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, there's a YouTube channel dedicated this guy Englishman, the Pangest Munch, and he just like reviews fried chicken places in England.
Yeah,
I was gonna say that the foreign food restaurants in and around England specifically are really good. So if you like are in England and you don't want to have to deal with English food, there are lots of like good Indian places, and they have Chinese food there. I had the best Indian food I've ever had in my life. That's the thing.
The imported culture that the English have, like Indian and China, then Chinese, as you said, are fantastic. Best curries.
That was the biggest thing that I noticed from England is just like especially in Southampton, like, London's so massive and spread out. I didn't get a good sample of it. Southampton, it's a little bit more of a tighter area. And just the sheer volume of different places to eat. Like, on the block where my hotel was, there was a Turkish cafe. There was an Iranian cafe. There was I can't remember if it was Chinese or Japanese, but an Asian place to eat. And then like a pub on every other building because England has nothing but pubs.
Nothing but pubs.
Oh my God, so many pubs.
Did you go to a Spoons?
No, what's that?
It's a pub joint, but like
Witherspoons. Yeah. I went to a few because they were all over. Yeah. I had some buttermilk fried chicken at a place called O'Neill's in Southampton. That was delightful. I feel like this is probably because of how many Irish people are in England, again, because of the proximity to Ireland, but every place where I went and got a Guinness, it was poured as well as you could possibly pour a Guinness. And they were, they were so good. Every pint was
the Irish don't fuck around with Guinness.
No, they don't.
They do not fuck around.
One of my friends from England came here for a little bit and he stayed in the region and went to Chicago, and he compared the way that they have Indian places to how we have so many Mexican places.
That's a very good comparison.
Cause like, he was like, oh, you guys have all these, you know, he tried a bunch of them and said that it's very similar. It's just different import, sort of, if that makes sense. I haven't been, I can't confirm, but that's what he said. He also said he's going to make me eat the English breakfast, even though I don't eat meat, whatever.
I don't think England has like a Indian version of Taco Bell is the only other
thing. They do have Taco Bell though.
Well, that's not like I'm talking about like El Amigo.
No, I know, like, but like a very like how Taco Bell is a very Americanized ripoff of Mexican food.
Yeah,
like an English version of that for Indian food.
I bet there is, but I just didn't encounter. I feel like there has to be. Someone's figured it out.
Yeah, somewhere.
I saw the American chain, like there was a Burger King, which I did actually eat at a Burger King one time because it was the only place open at like 10:30.
I've heard that everything closes at like 10.
A lot of the it's not, there are still some, and like because of the advent of like of Uber Eats and all those food delivery options, like it helps cut down on that. But I'd say it seems like every night there were enough pubs open till like 1, 2, 3 in the morning. If you wanted to stay out all night, you absolutely could.
I mean, you know, they don't have Denny's though. So
no, they don't.
Did you have any like really traditional English? Cause like when I was there for 2 weeks traveling all around England, did the whole like backpacking thing, through Europe, and 2 weeks of it was spent there and 4 days in Ireland. A week and a half, I guess, in England, and then 4 days in Ireland.
What exactly do you mean by
like spotted dick? I was forced to have that.
No, I did not. Everyone, I know that's a running. I feel like English people think that that's all Americans. Commercial I saw that was English people making fun of Americans because all they think about it with England is spotted dick. I'm like, no, yeah. I didn't have any spotted dick.
Lots of food made out of intestines. I had like a meatball that was like liver and heart and intestines, and I can't remember what it was called.
Yeah, again, Scotland, I love you, but what the hell is haggis? What is that? who came up with that? Why?
Oh,
for
I
what
had
reason?
A,
for what purpose?
I had a few meat pies. It was one place I went to. It was like a
pork one because
I had a steak and ale pie at like the most like stereotypical traditional English pub I think I could have possibly went into, because I walked in and there were like 10 grumpy old guys sitting in the back yelling at the TV because Liverpool was playing. And I'm like, I feel like this, I walked into the Chicago equivalent of the angry guy sitting at the edge of the bar yelling at the Bears game. I felt like that's where I had transported to, but I had a steak and ale pie there that was delicious. That was called the Red Lion in Southampton. Another place in Southampton, which Mill will appreciate the name of this, and Shane, Bessie, I don't know if you were into the show as much, but it was called Pie Carumba.
Oh my God.
It was, I saw the sign, I'm like, I have to go into this place. And they had this like barbecue chicken meat pie concoction that was fantastic. I went in for the name alone.
Yeah, the British love their pastries.
Yeah. And there was a lot of like, there was a place like across the street from one of the hotels I was at that was like a designer dessert place, but it like you, like it looked like a restaurant where you sit in. Like they're apparently really big on their desserts. Like this looked like a place where you go and it looks like a restaurant, but all you could get was dessert. But
holy shit.
Yeah.
We have a Japanese version of that in Atlanta.
Oh. So it's not just an English thing.
No.
Hey, speaking of spotted dick, Dick Panic was assigned to the Chicago Wolves.
Oh, well, when we're watching the Rockford IceHogs in the playoffs, maybe we could see
it. I was going to go see him for $2 beer night.
You spotted a dick in the roster, so.
Yes, we did.
I'm trying to think.
Not to mention why Dick Artie, we were talking about earlier.
Yes. Oh, God.
oh, boy.
Yeah. We're losing it again. I'm trying to think if there's any. I mean, the kebab places. Oh my God, there were so many places to get kebabs. I had a German donor kebab one night at like 11:30, and it was maybe the best thing I've ever had in my life.
I meant to ask you, did you actually have a Goose Island over there?
No, I didn't. I just got the last night I was there, I got served a pint of Guinness in a Goose Island.
That's what I figured.
I was like, of course. They did have Goose Island there, but I'm like, I can get Goose Island at
home. I'm in England. Yeah, exactly.
you're literally like, I live outside of where they brew Goose Island. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I used to be able to go sit at a White Sox stadium with the giant Goose Island in right field, but they took
what
that
the hell?
Down.
They got rid of that and Rev.
Yeah. Yeah.
Miller Lite, baby.
Yeah, whatever. Oh, I actually at both of the stadiums that I went to Southampton Stadium and Arsenal Stadium in London, and St. Mary's Stadium in Southampton is 30,000. The other one is 60,000. So you can get an idea of the size of these buildings. But the hot dogs that I had at those places, the meat was like, I felt like better than almost any stadium hot dog I've ever had at any baseball stadium in America. And the bun was like legitimate bread. Like, I feel like you go to any stadium and baseball stadium in America, and the hot dog bun is like the shittiest quality bread. This thing was like, I felt like it was a full on hamburger bun that just happened to be cut horizontally for a hot dog to sit on top of it. So that's my food review from the stadiums in England. Outstanding hot dogs.
Is that 60,000? Like, is that comparable to being at like Notre Dame or something like that? Like, does it feel kind of like, do you know what I mean?
It's
or an NFL game, maybe.
It felt very Soldier Field-y to me. Yes.
Okay. I was just thinking Notre Dame because it's old. Like, Soldier Field's old, but it has a spaceship on top of it now.
Yeah. Well, the Arsenal Stadium, the Emirates Stadium, I should say, is fairly modern. At least it looked like it.
Yeah, they renovate the hell out of those buildings, yeah. Don't they? They keep because they don't want to like ruin it, but.
And the biggest difference, I don't remember if I wrote about this or not, but you're not allowed to have your beer in your seats at soccer.
Yeah, it's because of those fights.
Yeah, it was from like 1985 because people were literally beating each other to death in soccer games. So they banned that. But the funniest thing I saw at this game was this guy walked up. He ordered two beers and a hot dog, and they brought him the beers first. He chugged the one beer. And then they brought him his hot dog, and he picked up the beer and the hot dog, and he walked away.
So you saw my dad there.
It's like that man has been to this building before, and he knows what he's here for.
I've seen my dad do that before.
That's.
I've also, like, in America, people bring beer to Little League games, so imagine not being able to get a beer at a professional.
Well, you can get beer, you just can't take it out to your seats.
That's what I'm saying. Like, imagine, like, being at the UC and then, like, sorry, you got to drink this in the concourse.
I will say, like, the people that complain about people waiting for whistles and all that at Blackhawks games, that being able to go get a beer significantly cuts down on that. So there's that, too.
Yeah.
Do I miss any other English food takes before we start to wrap this up here?
I got nothing because I haven't gone there.
Something to strive for, Mel. You got time.
I got goals. No, thank you.
All right. Well, I'm going to guess that's it then.
Their snacks are really good. And then that's what I was thinking. Monster Munch and things like that. That's what I miss about English food. And then if I don't think you were in Scotland, so you didn't get a chance for Iron Brew. But.
No, but I so badly need to go back because there's so much more of that place to explore. And like, I didn't even get into, you know, the other parts of the UK. So yeah, that's going to happen again for sure. And maybe then I'll go do that. Betsy, did you have anything else to add?
No, well, I was going to say, if people have a chance to go to England and they like outdoorsy stuff, they have to hit the Great Lakes area, because that's the most beautiful place I've ever been.
We've got Great Lakes here.
No.
not like theirs.
If you've ever seen like Pride and Prejudice or anything like that, they film a ton of the parts where that she's like the movie with Keira Knightley, I think they filmed them both there, but there's like all these big sweeping scenes and stuff like that. I would recommend that. And I want to say most of the food that we had, because we stayed in like little inns while we were there, because we were trying to get what we as college kids thought was the quintessential like experience. Oh yeah, we're staying in like an inn.
I was trying to do the same thing, very much removed from college. Like, I stayed at the hotel in Southampton. They told me was 500 years old and it was haunted. So
yeah, I was not
staying at the Holiday Inn.
Yeah, and the food that they had at the inns were better than any, like, pretty much anything I had in the city that was English food related.
Yeah.
It was not like the Chinese and the Indian that I had were the best meals that I had my entire trip across anywhere that I went that summer.
No, if you could find I think the same thing's true in America. If you can find the small local joints where the mom and pop shop, that's where you get the real good stuff instead of like the big chain. So like, I think there was a, I stayed in one Marriott hotel and that had their like hotel breakfast, continental breakfast for one morning. And it was like, it felt like every other hotel breakfast I've ever had. So definitely go to the original ones. I felt like that was the most British thing I did, was the British breakfast and the cup of tea every morning. Don't let Tad Lasso fool you. It's actually not that bad. If you splash in some milk, a little bit of sugar, it's not that bad. I'm still more of a coffee guy, but it's pretty
good. I got to dump in a lot of sugar.
Yeah. Yeah, tea requires a lot of sugar for me.
I'm about to make some tea right now.
And we're glad you gutted it out through your upper body injury, and we appreciate that. We also appreciate Betsy and Shay hanging out this evening. But that's going to do it for this episode of Musings on Madison. Again, I'm on Twitter at dmelt57. Shay is at Shepherd Price. Mill's at Mill182. Betsy's not on Twitter, but you can find her at secondcityhockey.com under the name LBR. We're going to do some more podcasts the rest of the season. I have no idea what we're going to talk about because there's not really too many other things going on with this team, but maybe we'll do a mailbag episode. I keep thinking we need to do that and put out a call for questions. And then the three or four people who still listen to this can send us some questions, and we'll definitely answer them because there's only three or four people sending them. But we'll be back next week with something, and we hope you're back as well. Thanks again for listening, and we'll talk to you then.
I won't let my active psoriatic arthritis joint symptoms define me.
Emerge as you. Tremfya guselkumab is proven to significantly reduce joint pain, stiffness, and swelling in adults with active psoriatic arthritis. Some patients even reported less fatigue as assessed by survey 1 week prior. Results may vary. Tremfya is taken by injection 6 times a year after 2 starter doses at week 0 and 4.
Serious allergic reactions may occur. Tremfya may increase your risk of infections and lower your ability to fight them. Before treatment, your doctor should check you for infections and tuberculosis. Tell your doctor if you have an infection or symptoms of infection, including fever, sweats, chills, muscle aches, or cough. Tell your doctor if you had a vaccine or plan to.
Emerge as you. Learn more about Tremfya, including important safety information, at Tremfya.com or call 1-877-578-3527. See our ad in Food & Wine magazine. For patients prescribed Tremfya, cost support may be available.